it's the 411. You're tuned in to 411 Teen. 411 Teen is a weekly program for teens and other interested folks. 411 Teen provides a forum to examine and discuss various issues and events that confront and intersect our daily lives. I'm Dr. Liz Holyfield, and joining me here at the roundtable as 411 Teen panelists are all students from SAIL. I welcome Hannah Hancock. Hannah is a junior, and she's into student government. She's a student government member. She enjoys reading and history.
It's great to be here.
Eileen Bustamante. Eileen is a senior, and she is into Human Relations Club, student government, and current social issues.
Hello.
Aaron Waddell, he's been here before, and I'm always glad to have him. He is a junior, student government member, tennis, and hiking.
Hey, guys.
David Bennett. David is a senior. He's into programming, video games, math, internet. Welcome.
Nice to be here.
Alexa Rozier, she's a student government member. She plays the guitar, she sings, and she plays the piano.
What's up, guys?
Amina Kamal. Amina is a senior, and she's been here before. A couple of y'all have been here before, and I'm always glad to have you back. She is into dance and Batman and politics, and she is the student government body president?
Yes. Thank you for having me.
Well, thanks for coming. I look forward to talking with you about this topic. So you all, welcome to 411 Teen. Racial profiling is a very egregious form of discrimination. It targets a group of people because it's believed that that group is more likely to be engaged in particularly criminal activity. Racial profiling disproportionately affects people of color in the United States. The complexion of America is changing with hues ranging from blue-black to sepia. Over 7 million Americans identified themselves as members of more than one race in the 2010 census. But what's the real deal with race relations? Is racial discrimination dead? My opening question to you all is, in your opinion, how does America think about race and ethnicity? How do they approach it? And we'll just go around the table, whomever. Am I looking at you, Amir? Whomever. I mean, David, you want to start? And I'll go around. All right.
I'll start. I think that it's a subject that's always approached really tentatively, and very rarely is there a open discussion without someone feeling as though they have to accept guilt or a burden for the way that they feel. And I think that if we had a more open and honest dialogue, there could be legitimate progress.
Okay.
I often hear America, all the cultures we have here, is a melting pot. Mm-hmm. And I've spoken to someone, one of my friends that lives in Canada. And in Canada, they describe it as more of a salad bowl. Like, everybody has their individual identities, mm-hmm. but still manages to become one. And in America, it just feels like eventually all our cultures just become one big Americanized thing, like mm-hmm. having, like, Taco Bell and fast Chinese food, stuff like that, just like something that's easy to consume.
Mm-hmm. Good point. And both of you raised some points we'll come back to. Hannah, you're nodding your head. Will you just share what you're thinking?
I think a lot of, and I agree a lot with Amina, I think a lot of the issue is that there is such a like fear of being blamed for anything mm-hmm. that kind of stops any kind of discussion about it. But you can't really look at it when you have a system that's discriminatory against certain groups of people. It's not fair to not acknowledge that, especially when you are the individual that is not being affected by the system.
Mm-hmm. Okay. David?
I mean,
I think this country not too long ago, you know, we had, you know, racial discrimination, you know, prevalent throughout the United States. And it's still a touchy subject today. And not many people, you know, they feel, I guess, they don't want to talk about it as much that they should. And it's still, it's not as prevalent as today, but, you know, it's still around.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Aaron.
Yeah, I agree how, like, back in the day it was, like, a lot worse than it is now. And I think we are slowly getting better. And I agree with Eileen about we are kind of getting mixed now and we're getting better and not looking at more of a you're so different, we gotta make you an outcast. We're kind of getting closer, but of course there still is some tension in between us. But yeah, I think we're getting a lot better.
Alexa.
I think that in America, people take a very passive-aggressive attitude towards race. Mm-hmm. And I also think that here in America, everything is really commercialized, as in when you bring up things like Taco Bell or fast Chinese food places, that's not really how Hispanic food is made, mm-hmm. and that's not really how a lot of Asian foods are made. And so I think just everything in America is kind of commercialized when you think about, or it's an Americanized way of thinking about a certain culture.
Mm-hmm.
It's not like that actual culture.
All of you have raised several good issues, and I want to go back to them. I want to start with you, Eileen, because you made the analogy of the salad bowl versus being mixed. And I just wonder, what would be your preference? Because it seems like the salad bowl would be better than this whole racial mixing. Mm-hmm. Because what I get from it, and you all tell me if I'm wrong and I'd like to have you respond to it, is that the salad bowl says, hey, there are all different kinds of things in this salad. That's what makes this salad good. But each still has its own still distinct identity. You know, tomatoes remain tomatoes and they're not mashed up. They're tomatoes, okay? And you have your spinach and on. And it seems like that may be a goal as opposed to when you say mix, that whole connotation, you lose your identity. And so I wanted to have you all talk about that. Am I thinking in the right way? Am I getting the right vibe?
Yeah, that's how I feel. A melting pot is like how I would describe America, because you want to become part of American society, but you also want to still maintain your identity, your racial or ethnic background. Mm-hmm. So it can be difficult to say, well, I want to be American, but what counts as American? How can I become more American without losing my background? And that's where it gets like a bit difficult, because some people will want to wash away some of their background to make it, to just fit in a bit more. Some that can be from completely, like, not completely denying, but trying to sway away from your racial group, or changing the sound of your name to accommodate American tongues, mm-hmm. and changing the way you make your foods. It can honestly be forgotten and just watered down in many different senses.
Comments from the rest of you. How do you feel about that particular aspect of the melting pot versus the salad?
I totally agree with Eileen. I feel like assimilating is so much easier than having your own cultural and ethnic identity. Partially because since we're talking about racial profiling, it's so much easier to gain the privilege of whatever
racial ambiguity.
Yeah, right, and to have racial ambiguity is almost, it's like a sort of safety net as opposed to being your own individual. And I understand how it's, you know, it's culturally acceptable to kind of follow certain trends, but there's a difference between following a trend and losing part of yourself, and also establishing self-hate in the process, because you're not delving into who you really are or what your background is. It's just what's easy.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Other comments? Yes, Alexa.
I read an article recently about mixed people in America, and the guy who wrote it was just talking about how mixed people were mixed with, like, black and white or something like that, usually just get called black, and they're not allowed to really accept the white side of themselves, or people who are Asian and white or just any type of mix, they're not really allowed to fully accept every part of themselves. They have to conform to, like, mm-hmm. how America wants them to be, and I just think that that's, I think it's really sad that that's mm-hmm. still mm-hmm. happening in 2013.
Yeah. Yeah, go ahead, David.
Well, it's like, you know, coming to America, you know, it's like joining a big group, and, you know, you want to fit in, and you want to be normal and fit in with everybody else. So you leave behind, like with what Eileen was saying, you leave behind a lot of, you know, your own culture. And, you know, if it's with anything, trying to fit in and mm-hmm. trying to join a group of people, and, you know, coming to the United States is like that.
Another point that you all made is that the need for an open dialogue. And you thought that this need was really somewhat thwarted because of guilt that individuals may feel, or just styles, passive-aggressive. Do you have any thoughts or insights as to how we get to that point? Because all of you are saying, hey, we need just to have an open dialogue where people aren't going to feel responsible, they aren't going to feel guilty. But how do we get there? I mean, do you have any suggestions?
Yes.
Okay, go right ahead.
I'm going to go ahead and say that in my humble opinion, the worst type of racists and the worst type of racism is what's accepted. So I've dealt with a lot of people who I would consider racist, and the worst of it is when someone believes that what they're saying is just the truth, and so therefore they get to say mm-hmm. it. Mm-hmm. And they're so ignorant and blinded by what has always been, that they're incapable of stepping away from their comments and thinking objectively, is this statement okay that I can say this? Not, oh, I just say it and that's just how I feel and it's just true, mm-hmm. but actually assessing the way that it's making another person feel. And so I feel like if we get out of the rut of this is the way that it's always been, we can mm-hmm. proceed. But since we're still stuck there, we can't really move.
Okay. And I feel like being like racism in America seems like a personality trait. Like a person doesn't think like, oh, I'm racist, but they can do racist acts, say racist things, have racist thoughts. It's not a personality trait. It's not like saying I'm a funny person. It's just something that is slowly massaged into your mind, into your daily lives. And so once we think of racism as not a part of our daily lives, but instead of something that needs to, that happens and that needs to go away and that hurts people, then we can have a conversation. And I also feel like things that are racist are often put off as racist by people who should not have the right to say what is racist and what is not racist, because it is not affecting them. It's just them perpetuating the racism.
That's right. Someone white doesn't have the right to tell me mm-hmm. that the N-word isn't racist.
Isn't racist.
I just have to throw that example out there.
Yeah.
Well, that's a good one. You know, when you think about what happened with the football player, mm-hmm. I got a blank. You know who I'm talking about, right?
I do.
Okay. Played Miami? I can't think of his name right now. But you know what I'm saying. Mm-hmm. And what was going on in the locker room. That's an excellent example of what we're talking about. How would you describe the attitudes about race and ethnicities that you encounter from your peers? Are all of them as enlightened? Uh-oh. I can tell. People can't see you, but I can tell from your response. Yeah. But, you know, are they enlightened, or I'm just talking to a select group?
I think being white. There's definitely, I hear a lot more of the, like, passive, oh, this is the way they act, they, you know, and I think it's really depressing to hear people my age already be so blatant and passive with their racism. And I think in our, especially, and I hate putting the stereotype on us, but being in the South, there is a lot of stuff left over. So it's really sad to see kids so ignorantly accepting of, I am better because of my skin color, and it's just the way it is.
Hold your thoughts. You raise a good point. We're going to take a brief break, but we'll return momentarily. If you're just tuning in, the program is 411 Teen, a conversational forum for teens and other interested folks. This hour, we're talking about race relations and racial profiling. We had to go on a break, and I think you were kind of getting into it, and Hannah, you too. Where does this racism come from?
Yeah, I kind of think, I agree with Hannah, how a lot of kids, like in high school and middle school, they're kind of already thinking that they, like white people kind of think they're already, I guess you could say, more superior, maybe not always superior, but than black people or Asians or any type of different nationality. And I kind of think they kind of get that from how they're raised and everything, because you're not born racist. Like, you're not already thinking, oh, you're different from me, so you're not, no. So I think it's also how they're raised and how their parents act and where they, like, who they are around and how the other people act.
Okay.
I forget who used the analogy, but I think a lot of it comes from, it's really hard to go from viewing a certain type of people as animals and cattle to seeing them as people that are equal to you. And it's difficult because that's you acknowledging that at one point you viewed someone as beneath you. And so now you have to have a certain amount of humanity towards them that you aren't used to.
You know, if you really think about it, the civil rights movement era wasn't too long ago. It was like a generation or two ago. So a lot of the people who lived there in that time, they're still alive today. They're still they're not outspoken about it. But in their hearts, they're racist. And you know, they teach their kids to be like that. And, you know, those kids teach their own kids to be like that. And but I honestly think it's dying out. And, I mean, it hasn't been that long, but, you know, action has to be taken.
Okay.
I was just thinking about when Nelson Mandela died. I was reading a lot of articles, and a lot of articles were like the public figure that helped end racism. And I was just here like, when did that happen? Where's the memo for that? Like, it's just funny because aside from racism, there's like different forms of racism that people are not aware of. There's colorism, there's anti-blackness, there's anti-Muslimah, there's many things. And it's like once like, this is just the tip of the iceberg, honestly. Mm-hmm. So racism is not going to end soon. And the longer we're putting off having an honest conversation, the longer there's going to be this tenseness around all people of color. So
what's your take on the Trayvon Martin case? I'm not going to get into it really in detail, but, you know, you all know what happened.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there's an example. How do you see that? How would you interpret?
I'm going to go ahead and say I work part-time with my dad's business, and he conducts, like, tests for racial profiling, like, across the country, and this is not – this Trayvon Martin incident – this isn't a one-time
mm-hmm.
thing. This is what has been happening. African-American women have been getting just frisked just because. Racial profiling is central in the war on drugs. It's central in everything, in the way that, not just in the way that Zimmerman treated Trayvon Martin, but it's central in the way that police officers handle cases in general. And I feel like until we can acknowledge the safety nets that certain races have to protect their own internal fears that release themselves,
mm-hmm.
and when people get killed, it's like until we can address that some things are just racist and some things are just your internalized hatred, then we're gonna keep having these shootings. We're gonna continue having disproportionate amounts of, I don't want to say brothers, but brothers being locked up. Like, we're not gonna be able to fix it until we can say that the system is completely
mm-hmm.
geared in one direction.
Mm-hmm.
Other comments? A lot of people are nodding their heads. Hannah,
I think the most depressing thing about that, besides the tragedy of someone losing their child, was that a lot of news outlets only had sympathy for Zimmerman.
Mm-hmm.
And that's fascinating because they would look at him like, oh no, he's being bullied. Mm-hmm. Oh no, the court of public opinion, everyone's going to come after him. But no one's looking at the fact that a mother lost her child who was just trying to go home.
Mm-hmm. He was a baby. I remember watching the news outlets, and they found pictures of him on social media, flipping off the camera, doing things like that, doing things that teenagers do. And I remember, like, after the case, I saw a picture uploaded online of Trayvon, like, with, like, beside an airplane with, like, being in the, like, he was interested in the Air Force program. You never saw that. You never saw his humanity and his innocence
mm-hmm.
in the media, I feel like.
Well, they did show pictures of him, more innocent pictures of him. I mean, of course they couldn't show
mm-hmm.
Those pictures of him flipping off the camera on media, but they showed more innocent pictures of him. And then on some news outlets and then on others, they completely turned it around, and they, mostly all the news outlets were biased one way or the other, and, but a lot of people went about, saying Trayvon's guilty just on the lone fact that, you know, he's black, and, you know, and, yeah.
What made me uncomfortable about the case was, like, when they had the panels didn't want to say that this was an issue of race, but you could see how African Americans were on one side, and then mostly white people were on the other side, and they tried to get around the issue of, like, this is not a case of about race, but it was. You could see how the dynamics played out.
Exactly. You know, several of you mentioned being, I think, in the first segment, something about fair. Is that a realistic goal? I mean, do you think we will ever get to a point where we deal fairly with individuals who are different, whatever it may be, whether it's skin color or ethnicity, or, you know, do you think that that is a realistic goal or direction?
How long are we talking?
Well, we don't have that long, Eileen. Yes, Alaska.
At this point in time, I don't think that that is a realistic, like, thing to think that's going to happen, because right now on TV, you still have Hispanic people and Black people get portrayed as, like, ghetto or just wild, mm-hmm. and then Asian people are the people who put cats in their food, as far as, mm-hmm. like, TV mm-hmm. goes. Mm-hmm. And so I feel like right now, racially, or even just, like, society-wise, like, rich people and poor people, I don't think anyone's ever, at this point in time, going to be dealt, like, the exact same cards, because just society itself has everyone so...
Stigmatized.
Mm-hmm. And so I don't think it's anything that's realistic right now.
I just think it's disgusting that the most violent, racist group in the country have been white males. There hasn't been a single ethnic group, or not just ethnic group, but like women, Native Americans, African Americans, the list goes on, who they haven't subjugated, raped, pillaged, and killed. And yet they're the only ones who get a pass. Like, socially, they're the only ones who really aren't stigmatized. And I feel like presently, our law enforcement is ill-equipped to deal with the sensitivity of racial issues. Mm-hmm. And until our system isn't broken, you're going to keep having incidents. It's going to keep being fractured the way that it is.
Yeah, I don't think that, you know, that this unfairness will just go away, at least not in our lifetimes. And, you know, I think I would hope that perhaps in a few hundred years, maybe several hundred years, that it would be gone, but I can't even say for sure if that, you know, that would happen.
I'll say the all-knowing Oprah said it best. She caught a lot of flack for it recently, but she just pretty much said, you know what, the hard-line racists need to die out. I'm going to go ahead, and if you're asking me how will it be fixed, they just need to die. They just need to die.
Okay. Yeah. All right. When you think about your family members, are they as open as you are? And you don't have to identify any specific ones, but, you know, we think about our family members and attitudes that may be expressed and conveyed. Can you share with us what you found?
Yeah, I think more like our generation and maybe a generation above us are more, I would say, lenient to it, or more either non-racist or more joking about it than really honest racist. But when you get to the older generations, like grandmothers or grandfathers or great-greats, mm-hmm. and that's when the really time was where you were, like, pretty much supposed to be racist. So I think it's still very big in that generation, and they're still alive to still have that aura around mm-hmm. the U.S.
How do you... And again, this is to all of you. When you encounter a racist comment or a racist attitude, do you address it, or do you just allow it to just kind of, you know, go over and you continue your thing? Eileen.
Yeah. I used to just let it slide, mm-hmm. but then after a while, it just... every time a racist comment is said, I feel like I lose a part of myself. Like, I'm giving them the pass to say it. If I let it slide one time, they won't stop. They'll keep on thinking, oh, she thinks this is funny. She thinks this is fine. She agrees with me. There is, when you, in your silence, that means yes. That's what, when a classmate says something racist, it's a joke to them. It's not a joke when it's affecting real people.
Mm-hmm.
I think that the time that... racism can come up any time, but most... What I see most often where it's just accepted and thrown into the world is sexism. Because the thing is that people can be racist in their own personal pockets of friends where everyone looks the same and feels the same and thinks the same way. But with sexism, it's just kind of... that joke that always gets a pass, you know, mm-hmm. like, mm-hmm. and so with that, I mean, I fight racism and I'll fight sexism all the time, but I feel like there's a different comfort level mm-hmm. when it comes from actually thoughts to speech. I think it's much more fluent when mm-hmm. it's gender-based and not race-related.
Okay. Other comments? Yes.
For me personally, like Eileen, when I was younger, I used to kind of just give people a pass on the racist comments that they would make. But after I entered high school and I started kind of hearing, like, not really, like, racist jokes, but people, like, making things, like, saying jokes about me being ghetto or just certain things like I just started to, like Eileen said, it just kind of makes you feel like you're losing pieces of yourself every time you just sit there and let them say it or you, like, pretend to laugh along or anything like that. And so these days, I kind of just, I don't, like, put people in their place as far as, like, insulting them, but I do just kind of, like, let them know that certain things are okay and then other things just aren't at all. So.
Because at some point it does feel like you are the joke. One day I was in class and there was just like a picture of, it was like a photographer, it was some photographer, and they took a picture of two Latino-looking boys smoking. They were like 12, they looked like they were 12 or 13. And a boy just in a whisper just said, "Mexicans." And like that was the joke of the class. Everybody laughed and it's like, am I funny? Like, do I walk in the class? Do you just think I'm funny looking? Like,
And it's even harder when you're the token. And the thing is in our classes at Sale, it's like majority white. So very often you will just end up being that token and you have to stomach it on your own or fight. I don't know.
And it's not just in Sale. It's pretty much in the real world too.
Yeah.
It's, I can't say there's a person of color that I don't know that does not have the same experiences that I do.
Usually when it's like a racist joke, I just shrug it off. I don't say anything. But more recently when I've been, if somebody's generally racist, and a lot of times they're secretive about it. They don't talk about it in the open. Well, with me at least, they would say to me something and I would try to explain to them reason, like ask them why they're that way and try to just explain how it doesn't make sense that they're racist and how, you know, it's not logical to be racist in the first place and, you know, morally, you know, right.
All right. Well, you all have definitely raised some really good issues, and we're going to get back to them and explore them a little further. You're tuned in to 411 Teen, a weekly program for teens and other interested folks. We're going to take a brief break, but we'll get right back at you. Welcome to the Ephesus Corner. Panelists weigh in on the rights and wrongs of daily life. Today's ethicist question is, can I lie to my boss to go on a job interview?
I don't think it's good to lie to your boss about going on a job interview, because if you get that job and you just quit all of a sudden, your boss is going to have to go and, like, at the last minute, your boss is going to have to go and do all these other interviews to try and find someone to replace you because they weren't expecting to have you just, like, quit on them or, like, switch jobs. So I think it's a little bit unethical.
Okay. All right.
Eileen here. I don't think it's unethical, because in the end of the day, I feel like you have to worry about yourself. And I'm not saying if you get the job, go on and quit. There are things that's 2 weeks notices. But you're leaving this job for a reason. And you don't want that weird tension between your boss and your boss, like, being on your back, like, hey, did you get that job? Do I need to go find somebody else for you? Because then they're going to be remembered as, oh, one time she wanted to leave this job. She's not satisfied here.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't think you should really lie to get into a job, like, during the job interview. Because if you have to lie about a certain question, then you might not really fit in the type of job that the manager is running or fit in the company. So I think your personality would probably fit better somewhere else.
Okay. All right. We'll come back to some of this. Hannah, David, Amina, whomever.
I don't really think that it's necessarily, because I agree with Eileen a lot, it is kind of every man for himself, especially if we're like a capitalist nation. You have to go and find work.
To my future employers in the Tallahassee area, I don't think it's good to lie. But I think there's also a difference between job seeking and opportunity arising. And so if you get a wonderful gift of an opportunity of another job, then I think it's fine to just, it would be best to be honest about the step up in your life. But if it's just, oh, I'm just going to switch this job out for something in the same kind of, I think that it would be best not to create workplace tension.
I completely misunderstood that question.
I think you shouldn't, you know, lie if you're trying to get a job.
You are working and you're going to lie to your boss, your current employer, about a job. You answered it correctly about a job interview, okay? You're really going to a job interview, but you're not telling them you're going to a job interview. So should you lie to your boss to go on a job interview?
No, you shouldn't. I mean,
okay. Now, for those of you who said no and for those who said yes, what about the fallout, okay? And I think you raised this issue, Eileen. You're going on a job interview. If you go on this job interview, your current employer may create some tension. Okay. Alexa.
I expect that whatever job I have in my future, that whoever I'm working for will be mature enough to be able to have me say, hi, I have this better job opportunity here. I'm going to go interview for it. And I may or may not be leaving here. And so I don't think that it should cause any type of extraordinary conflict if I'm in a mature setting.
Yeah, the only thing I would say in response to that is that that's an ideal situation. That's not real, okay? Mm-hmm. I mean, really, it's not real. I mean, that real is not the case. Well, that many times, let me finish because we're going to have to close. But many times that situation where you have that mature boss does not exist. You might have someone a couple years older than you are who doesn't like the fact that maybe you're in school or you're going to get a better job. And even if you don't take the job, there are ways, passive aggressive ways, that they in turn will respond to you. Now, I know we could elaborate on this, but the time is out. So I'd just like to again say thanks. That's today's Ethicist Corner. What's the 411? I have a dynamic group of young folks here. They're here representing Sale High School. And we're talking about race relations and race profiling. And I think you've kind of touched on this. But I wanted to ask you if any of you have experienced discrimination. And if so, and I know you touched on an incident, and if so, what it was and how you handled it.
My best friend in middle school was an African-American girl, and her name was Karina, and she would hang out with me after school. And one day she was going to come home with me. And at the time, my grandfather was picking me up. And my mother didn't tell me because she knew that I would have had something to say to him.
Mm-hmm.
But he called her on the phone when my grandmother had mentioned something to him about picking us up. And he told her that he was not going to have one of them in his car. And I will never forget, like, my mother telling me that story and being like, I didn't want to say it to you in front of them because I knew you would say something. And it was really, I was almost disgusted because there's such an acceptance. Like, we're so passive about it, especially white people who do acknowledge that there is racism. It's so easy to be passive, and that's so annoying and disgusting.
Did you ever discuss it at all?
We don't talk to that side of the family anymore.
Okay. All right. What about the rest of you? Can you share any incidents that you may have experience discrimination for whatever? Alexa.
I'll just say this because it happened fairly recently. In drama club, a friend of, or not even a friend of mine, but just someone who I act with, like on a regular basis, semi-regular, told me that I was ghetto because I wear colored pants and because my hair is most of the time braided.
Yeah. And how did you respond to that?
At first, I was really angry, and I am sad to say this, but I did kind of sort of, like, curse him out or whatever. But after that, after I, like, got my bearings or whatever, I was like, I talked to him, and I was like, you know, that's really not okay, because a lot of people wear colorful pants, and then a lot of people braid their hair. So to tell me that I'm ghetto just because I'm black and I braid my hair and wear colored pants is really subjective and very disrespectful.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
I have a litany of personal stories that I share regularly. Just hit me up at Sale High School. I'll tell you several. But presently, I happen to be dating an amazing, very tall, lanky white kid. Shout out to James. And going to the mall with him and just being black and also having him be white is always an experience. There's always a look. And the thing is that he's so wonderful that he doesn't even notice what's going on.
He's not aware.
But I have a trained eye, and also I have eye contact, like prison eye contact issues. So if I see someone looking at me a little bit too long or their eyebrows are furrowed a little bit too much, I just feel it. Mm-hmm. I can feel the tension, and it's just on the daily.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
At work a few weeks ago, I was opening up, I was setting everything up, and where I work, there are homeless people around. So they come around sometimes, and I let them have samples of food, and I wasn't open yet, but I told the man, would you like to try this? We don't have any bourbon chicken out yet. And he's like, bourbon chicken? No, I can't have bourbon chicken. And my boss came behind me, he's like, don't mess with him too much, I think he's a little drunk. And he told me that in Spanish. Mm-hmm. And so the man that was in front of me, he said, what? Green card? Green card. I have a green card. Do you have a green card? And it was very disrespectful because mm-hmm. I was trying to help this man. I would not help this man. I was trying to be nice to this man. He comes up, he's at least twice my age, and he comes to me at my place of work and completely embarrasses me. Mm-hmm. So.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'm partially Hispanic and mostly on my mother's side. So when we were at Taco Bell and this big guy walks in who asking around for food, and supposedly he's homeless, and he went up to my mom and, you know, asked for some money, but we were kind of low on income, and so she offered him to give him a food item off of our tray, and he was kind of ungrateful about it, and he kind of asked my mom, he's like, you're Puerto Rican? And like my mom's like, she didn't answer him, and he looked really like he looked at her with like disdain in his eyes, and
okay. A recent study by the Office of Civil Rights shows that the percentage of young black men suspended from school is far greater than that of their peers. Another study by the Sentencing Project examines vastly disproportionate rates of incarceration for African American men. Why do these disparities exist?
Well, that's a big question.
Yeah, it's loaded.
Well, I just want to know
what's the fact that you always bring up, Amina, about...
Oh, the one that I... Okay. Mm-hmm. Well, this is one of my favorite facts. It's that 70% of drug users are white, but 90% of who's locked up for it mm-hmm. is black. And that goes back to the war on drugs that I love to throw into my daily conversations. And I think that it's systematic. Like, it's... How are the schools that these African Americans are going to? What's happening socially? What, and beyond even socially, like in the high school, what's happening in their neighborhood that's, I don't want to say causing or prompting even.
Contributing.
But definitely contributing factors. Mm-hmm. And I don't want to say why aren't they being stopped at the high school level, but where are the hands-on adults that are... I don't know, because our school, I would like to say that we're all very lucky to have super hands-on teachers who care about us on an individual level, mm-hmm. and just the slightest shift in mood they will pick up on and ask mm-hmm. us how our day is. But not everyone is lucky enough to go through
exactly.
a system that we have been so fortunate to have on a daily basis, knowing that there's support for us. And so I would say that a lot of it comes from just how much support they're getting in their environment.
Okay, so did anybody else have any comments? So if we're talking about whatever, whether it's who's in prison or who commits the crimes, is there any situation, is there any time when racial profiling is justified? Mayor Bloomberg said, you know, you look at our prisons and they're nothing but black and brown people in there. So therefore, we should be frisking black and brown males that are walking down the street because they commit all the crimes. And that's not an exaggeration. You all know that.
Yeah.
I know. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I just feel
so I'm just wondering, is there a time?
No, there
when,
isn't.
Yeah, when, no. When it should be, when it should be accepted.
There
because
isn't.
We had, just let me just say, we had all these airplane intentional crashes. And they say all the people that did it were folks from the Middle East.
Well, then,
so anybody that looks like they're from the Middle East, you know, maybe we should check them out.
Then where's the questioning of the young white males? They're
with
the
ones
with their firearms. Nobody's questioning people. Nobody's questioning whether they should be able to have firearms. They're just questioning should firearms of that level be illegal?
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. the thing is then the reason why I say no so promptly is because that only perpetuates stereotypes. And
it
I
makes
was
it okay.
I was literally in an argument last. Like 3 weeks ago, where a kid looked me in my eyes and told me that, oh, well, what? Well, the problem are the black men. Look at how many of them are in prison. And I looked at him and I said, why are they in prison? Assuming that I would get an intellectually stimulating answer.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, because they're effing idiots, was his response to mm-hmm. me. Mm-hmm. And that was a belief that had been perpetuated mm-hmm. through our acceptance of racism. And so that's why I say no.
Stereotypes are a necessary evil is one of the most idiotic arguments I've ever heard. It's easy to say that when you're not being stereotyped against. When I can't live my normal day-to-day life because I have to be better. As said on the show on Scandal, it said you have to be twice as good to get half of what they have. I can't live my day-to-day life. If I mess up, I'm another statistic. If I don't mess up, it's what expected of me. I'm a good American citizen.
Mm-hmm. Other comments?
I think it's interesting that if this were a different issue, like gun control, and there was someone brought up a constitutional amendment and its justification of taking care of gun control, then people would accept it, I think. But no one wants to discuss, like, the 14th Amendment, and in it it says equal protection of the law unless you aren't white. You know, like,
mm-hmm.
it's fascinating that that's not even being discussed in conversations about it.
And that's the truth. White men will just get that pass, whereas the other races have to cross their fingers
cross
every
their
time.
Fingers.
When there was like 20, I think 21 or 22 mass shootings in 2012, one of which was happened in January, but I include that because obviously it was a domino effect,
mm-hmm.
and all the races had to cross their fingers. Oh, holy mess. Please, let's not let it be one of us. But mm-hmm. they were, if they're white, it's just like, oh, well, this is a tragedy. Let's get
this
to the
this is a failure of our system.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
This is a failure. This person isn't a product of their community.
Absolutely.
This person is just white.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
so it's all right.
It's looked as like, what mental illnesses do they have? What are they going through?
Mm-hmm. And the first
which
question.
Would never, exactly, which would never be asked to a person of color.
Right. Do you feel the election of a black president has had any impact on race relations?
Yes. Okay. I think it blew people's minds away. Like, I'm really glad that Obama's middle name is Hussein. It blows people's minds away. They don't know that there's black Muslims. They just think Muslims are brown. That's it. Like, there's this whole world of race that I feel like a lot of America does not know about. They don't know. It's crazy. Like, there are black Latinos, there are white Africans, there's mm-hmm. everything.
Right.
There's everything. There's non-white Caucasians. That's why I refuse to say Caucasians, because there are people on the island of Caucasus that are not white,
mm-hmm.
that are Caucasian.
Mm-hmm. Comments? Okay. Is it possible, are we in a and this is what we hear very often, mm-hmm. a post-racial society. Now, I know you've heard that so many times.
What does post-racial mean? Does that mean, like, we don't care about it anymore?
I guess it means that race is not an issue anymore. Hmm. That's what it, you know.
That's funny. I think it just means it's passively accepted more. Like, it's more systematic now.
I mean, honestly, if you think that the way that Obama has been treated, or President mm-hmm. Barack Obama has been treated, is fair, and you honestly believe that we have entered a post-racial era, mm-hmm. then I think that you're kind of blind to a lot of things. Mm-hmm. I think you're...
You go pick up some bell hooks.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, look, I'd like to hear from all of you on that, as far as the post-racial society. And we only got 2 minutes.
I highly doubt that we are in a post-racial time, because, I mean, Obama, every time he makes a screw-up or anything like that, it's because he's black, or they bring up the mm-hmm. fact that he's black or half-black. And so I highly doubt that we are in any type of post-racial anything. I don't even think we're halfway to post-racial. No.
Yeah, I agree with that. Of how a lot of, like, for past presidents, people weren't really waiting for a mistake to happen. But, like, nowadays, I think, like, media are really waiting for Barack Obama to mess up somehow and say, oh, he's, like, an angry black man or something, and, like, drive that issue into everyone's minds to make it go against him.
Just because we have, like, a mulatto president doesn't mean, you know, we're in a post-racial, you know, society. And, you know... lost my train of thought.
Okay.
Okay, sorry.
Well, we're just about at the end here. The hands on the clock are telling me we need to close it up, but I'd like to say thank you. I appreciate you sharing your opinions and being very candid. To my listening audience, tune in next week, same time, same place, to get the 411 on 411 Team. This edition of 411 Teen was produced by Dr. Liz Hollyfield. Technical engineer, Evan Rossi. Audio copies are available, and if you would like to participate in 411 Teen or have topic suggestions, call 1-800-829-8809, extension 358. That's 1-800-829-8809. Extension 358. If you would like to subscribe to 411 Teen Podcast, log in wfsu.org.